You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Welcome to Theater Geeks Anonymous. At this time, we ask that you turn off all cell phones, unless, of course, you're using them to listen to this podcast, in which case, please keep it on. And please refrain from any flash photography, as it is dangerous to the performers of this podcast. Please be advised that this production may contain strobe effects, loud or sudden noises, nudity, and but probably not. And now, sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Don't you see? It's so simple. Step one, we Google the biggest flops on Broadway. Step two, we find the crazy stories behind them. Step three, we see how they lose millions of dollars.
Millions?
Broadway isn't cheap. A lot of fancy people want to be producers. Step four, find out why the show won't go on. Step five, end this episode and head to Times Square.
Times Square? That'll never work. Only Broadway successes are in Times Square.
Oh, ye of little faith.
Hey, what's up, Theater Geeks? Welcome to Theater Geeks Anonymous. I'm sorry, guys. This week we don't have Pamela, so you won't get your little sing-songy intro because y'all know I don't sing. But I do have two very special guests to intro our new work series for the podcast. We're really excited. What we want to do, and we've explained this in previous episodes, is we want to highlight some new shows, new plays that are happening in the theater world here in New York City. And so I have two guests with me today, my friend Jody Beck, who's been the dramaturg and director on Dear Prospective Student, a new musical about the admissions process for college, and the writer, Karen Robbins, who has been working with this show since its inception and wrote it with her sister, and it's a really cool story, and I'm really excited for you all to get to listen to these two ladies. So welcome, ladies.
Thank you.
So if, Karen, you can tell me how you came about, like, the idea for the show. How did you and your sister come up with this idea?
So I like to say that I survived the college admissions process with my three daughters. And what I learned and observed was just the extremes that people are going to these days. And when I say people, I mean parents of my generation, high school guidance offices, college admissions offices, and the students themselves. The extreme lengths they're going to get into what they perceive to be the top, most elite schools in the country. Right. And the message that these kids seem to be getting is that if you don't get into one of these top schools, your life is, I don't want to say ruined, but that's going to be the ticket for you to achieve everything that you've ever hope for.
Right.
And the converse of that is that if you don't get in, you know, what are your prospects?
Right.
And it was very important to me to let my kids understand that it, as far as I'm concerned, that is not true. Where you go is not going to determine who you will be.
Mm-hmm.
That depends on, I'm quoting lyrics from one of our songs, but, you know, your belief in yourself, your passion, your interests. So it just seemed to be screaming out to me to write a play about it, and that was the important message that I wanted to get out there.
It's awesome because it really is crazy when you think about it. You're asking an 18-year-old to make this decision about the rest of their life, and, like, we have no idea what's going to happen a year from now, six months from now, you know? And then on top of that, there's so many people who are extremely successful without having gone to college.
Yes.
And with it being so exorbitantly expensive, it just gets worse and worse. And I'm like, my niece is like 6 years old, and I'm thinking, oh my God, it's going to be like $200,000 by the time she's old enough to go to college. How are we going to do this, you know? And so I think that's why I just love this show. It's just so real and honest about how crazy it is to put all that pressure on an 18-year-old, but also that, like, it does not mean, like, it's the end of the world if you don't get into Harvard or Stanford or any of those schools. Like, that's not what it
means.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yes.
It's great.
I actually want to correct one little thing.
Oh, sure.
So Karen and her sister had the concept together, but Karen is the only book writer.
Right.
Okay.
It is her project. So.
Okay. Yeah. And then Michael Hicks was the
he's composer
he did
and lyricist.
Music and lyrics. Yes. Yes.
Great. Music and lyrics.
I mean, there's of course some intermixing between all of us when this process gets started, but yeah.
So let's go into that now, how you two met and how that whole thing came about.
So we entered the show into the West Village Musical Theater Festival. Mm-hmm. And we were accepted, which was very exciting. And we were told that we were going to need a director. And at that point, we did not have one. So we went to the coordinator of the festival and let him know that. And he said, not to worry, we will hook you up with a director. And as far as I'm concerned, fate smiled down on us because we were put together with the amazing Jody Beck. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, if it wasn't for Jody, we wouldn't be here today speaking with you.
Thank you. I was randomly taking music lessons with the head of the West Village Music Theater Festival, hoping to be in the festival. And then it just so happened that there were no equity contracts. Oh. And I couldn't be in the festival, but then he offered for me to direct, and I thought, oh, that's not the direction that I was thinking I wanted to go, but why the heck not? Mm-hmm. So I said yes, and then I showed up for the first rehearsal with Karen, and that was the beginning of it. Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
That's so fun. Yeah.
And I just remember after, I think you got four performances in the festival. After the fourth performance, we all went out for drinks. And I said to Jody, do you have any interest in maybe staying on with the project? Because I knew that we had something special. We clicked right away.
Mm-hmm. We worked well together. She responded well to my notes, and we just interacted very well. And it was just a really good relationship from the beginning. So
that's awesome. And so then at that point, so when you had first started writing the show, you took like a writing class or something like that, wasn't it?
I was working with a script developer.
Okay.
So I would send him, you know, a few scenes, and he would give me notes, and then we would talk again. And he was, at first, actually, I just thought it was going to be a straight play.
Right.
And he was actually the one who felt that this very much screamed out to be a musical. And unfortunately, I have no talent as far as that goes. So, luckily,
that is not true. By the way. Not true. I have audio recordings of Karen singing to my voicemail. So, not true.
So, yes. Yeah, so, a mutual friend of myself and Michael Hicks hooked us up.
Okay.
So that's how that came about.
And then once Jody came on, you were doing some dramaturgy too for the musical?
Well, at that point, Michael wasn't involved at all for the West Village Music Theater Festival.
Okay.
Like, he basically just handed the music over, and we were only doing three scenes for the festival.
Okay.
So that's all we had to produce, was to get those three scenes together. So we hired we ended up having to have a rehearsal pianist who ended up doing the very first arrangements of the music.
Okay.
And then we actually had a really great music director for the show. And he was recommended by Michael, I think, right? Mm-hmm. Do you remember his name?
Harrison?
No. He was our...
Oh, Rob Cookman?
Yeah, Rob Cookman. Yes. Rob Cookman was our actual... he played the show itself.
Currently, by the way, the music director for the national tour of Waitress.
So, stop!
Yeah. 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 He was the first person to record any of our songs. So, like, when we finished the West Village Music Theater Festival, the actors went and recorded just so that we could be able to start the process of hearing it and being able to show what we had for people. But it was, like, in somebody's apartment kind of recording. Right. It was not anything for public consumption. But the festival was kind of random, which they often are. But we won best song
of the entire festival,
which was 50 Words or Less.
Oh.
And we won best director, and did we win something else?
I feel like we had at least one best actor award.
Yeah, one best actor award too.
And who was your cast at this point?
It was an all non-union cast.
Okay.
Hence the no equity
right.
contracts and the reason why I couldn't be in the festival.
did anybody from that go to like the next iteration of the show?
Jenny Haley did, yes.
Okay. And then especially like the one she plays, right? Or was that girl in high school? The girl that she plays? Yeah.
So Blair is based on someone.
Yeah, we won't say who.
We won't say who. We'll be very cryptic about such things, but she was based on someone. And actually in the original script that I saw, it was the someone. And I was like, oh, who is this? And then I found it was somebody. And I was like, oh, yeah, we can't do that. So let's change the name to protect the not innocent. So her name is Blair. Mm-hmm. And she is hilarious.
She is hilarious. She does a great job.
Yeah.
Can you all just kind of walk us through the show a little bit just to give us an idea of like how the story sort of unfolds?
So it basically follows six high school seniors. Mm-hmm. They meet for the very first time at the name of our fictional school is Canterford University, which that name came to me because I was thinking Canterford.
Yeah.
So it became Canterford University. So these six high school seniors meet for the first time in the admissions office where they're there for their tour of campus and then their admissions interview. And they really come from all walks of life and they have very different background stories, but they're all convinced at the start of the show that what happens on this particular day is going to determine the rest of their lives. Mm-hmm. So the stakes are very high for them. Mm-hmm. And then through the course of the day, as they learn each other's stories, they come to realize that if they don't get into Canterford, life goes on and mm-hmm. they're going to be just fine.
Yeah.
So
it's such a good message. I just love it. Yeah. So then after you do the West Village Festival, what happens after that?
After that, Karen shared with me the full script. And
okay.
we immediately started rewrites okay. at that point. And then I think that's how that happened. And then in that same process, mm-hmm. Karen had submitted it to another festival.
Mm-hmm.
And that one was, what was that called?
The New York...
New Works.
New Works, yes.
New York okay. New Works Festival. And it was similar. We were doing three scenes. Mm-hmm. So we ended up using those same actors again
mm-hmm.
And doing the scenes again for this other festival while also working on the script as a whole.
Okay.
So the three songs that... songs/scenes that we included were 50 Words or Less,
mm-hmm.
Which had been shortened enormously because the mm-hmm. original script had all the kids and all their parents were involved.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So then it was like, okay, who are we concentrating on?
Right.
The kids. So that all went away. But it was a shortened version of 50 Words or Less. And then Average Female White,
mm-hmm.
But that was a scene in a bedroom at the time.
Okay.
Between Taylor and Blair, mm-hmm. and they actually both go to the same school, and they happen to both be applying to the same
oh, wow.
university.
Okay.
So, mm-hmm. And then the third was Choice, mm-hmm. which, or no, it wasn't Choice. It's what
it was
became
a song.
Choice.
Yes. Oh.
It was what
no,
was
it was
called?
Bumper Sticker.
It was
we
called
it Bumper Sticker.
Bumper Sticker.
And what was Bumper Sticker about?
It was for Buck, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, so
his storyline changed enormously.
So tell me, okay.
It was a beautiful song. It really is one of the songs that when you look back on it, we were like, if
sad to cut it.
Sad
yeah.
to cut it, yeah.
His original storyline is that he played football his entire childhood
uh-huh.
only because his father was pushing him
mm-hmm.
and really trying to live vicariously through his son because mm-hmm. He was sort of a nerd in high school And so he wanted to, I guess, get revenge by having his son be this big football star. Mm-hmm. And the premise behind the song Bumper Sticker was Buck singing All My Dad Cares About is putting that bumper sticker for Canterford University on the back of his car so that he could drive mm-hmm. around town and show everybody
that he had a Canterford kid.
Yeah. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Man, that's real.
It is real.
It's so real.
Yeah.
Because, like, parent, like, my mom was, like, a hardcore team mom, right? So even though I never played sports, it, like, she had the pin that said, like, drama club.
Oh,
mom. Like, she, you know what I mean? Like,
with your
she
face
would,
on it.
No, not with my
oh,
face.
She didn't do it with
if
your
they'd
face.
Had my face, she would have had it on.
Yes. Yes.
So, like, she, so my brother was in football. Like, so her minivan was, like, caked with everything that her children did. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's totally real. Like, when a kid, I mean, my university was on her van. Everything we did was on the car. So that is just so real. Mm-hmm. It really is.
Yeah. It's one of the many things to mm-hmm. end up on the cutting room floor, but yeah. one of the good ones that yeah. ended up there. I
yeah,
think.
Unfortunately.
Yeah,
that makes me now I understand like their fight so much more now hearing that song even
right.
too.
Right. Yeah. And that was the feedback we were getting. People were just not buying the story. Mm-hmm. That, you know, why is the father? Well, the thing was, while the father pushed him so much, the father knew nothing about football himself, which yeah. wasn't ringing true with people.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, I guess, it just didn't seem authentic that the son would never, up to this point, say something right. about this is not really what I want to do. So, we just kept getting feedback whenever we would put the show on. That was the one character that it just didn't seem to be working.
Right.
Yep. Yeah, sometimes you have to make those hard cuts just to make the story like as solid as it needs to be, and it can feel like a baby laid to rest.
Yes, mm-hmm.
That's right. So then after that festival, what happens next?
We went through a couple years, I feel, of rewrites.
Yeah,
or maybe a year, I guess. When was? So that we started together in 2013? Is that right?
14.
2014. Yeah. Okay, so it was a year and a half later.
Okay.
Like once, or maybe a year after the second festival, we ended up doing a ton of table reads, mm-hmm. a lot of, like, inviting our friends mm-hmm. to discuss characters, and we got it to a place where we thought we could do a equity staged reading.
Okay.
Which we did in September of 2015 at what used to be Abingdon Theater on 36th Street.
It's the Barrow Group now.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember because and then actually it was called Admissions then too.
It was called Admissions the Musical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember that. Okay. Mm-hmm. So then after you have that with Equity, what happens next?
We did a demo recording mm-hmm. because we knew that the only way we were. Because we learned a lot of things.
Yeah.
So at that point, we had a few possible producers that we had brought along with us from the festivals.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody seemed really quite legit, and no one was at that point willing to put any money forward. Mm-hmm. So, and everybody just kept saying, you need to be able to share this work. Like, mm-hmm. And we had only recordings of Michael sitting with his piano, like, when he originally composed the songs and was sharing them for us. So we knew we needed to have some type of packet. So we decided at that point, and at that point, we really believed that, like, all these songs would remain in this exact state. And because, I mean, it wasn't, we didn't spend a crazy amount of money for the recording, but
yeah.
we spent money on it, and I shouldn't say we. Karen spent money on it, and I facilitated spending the money. but we did do an actual recording of five songs at
okay.
that point, which were 50 Words or Less,
yeah,
Average Female White, Choice,
mm-hmm.
Break the Streak. Am I forgetting?
40s.
Oh, in the 40s. Mm-hmm. So we had those five songs. And it was interesting to have that record because it was almost as if as soon as it finished, we were still rewriting. And then it was like, oh, every time at that point that we sent it off, it was like, sorry.
It's okay.
I hope this is PG-13.
So sorry, kids out there. It's okay.
Theater people swear sometimes. but we thought, oh, now we've changed the lyrics of these songs. And so every script that we sent out, it'd be like the most current lyrics to these songs are not on the recording. They are in the script itself. So that was an interesting thing.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com.
I had a playwriting teacher at the Barrow Group, actually, and she would always say, writing is rewriting.
Absolutely.
It's really true.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of where we feel like we are at the moment. Like, okay, maybe that's what's happening. I don't know. I don't know. We're not there yet. We haven't gotten to the present time.
So tell me, after the Barrow Group, I don't know what ended up making the title be changed from Admissions to Dear Prospective Student, and then what happened after that one?
So, do you want to... So, after that, I think after we got the recording, mm-hmm. we decided... I think we went to a couple, like, producer meet and greets.
Right.
And then... Oh, and we
had Chicago...
Yeah, we had a Chicago production.
Oh, really?
We had also taken a class at the Commercial Theater Institute.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Where Karen was reintroduced to Ken Davenport mm-hmm. at that meeting. And then that allowed us to have an interaction with him where he basically coached us for a year.
How'd the Chicago run come about?
So we submitted to the festival in Chicago, mm-hmm. and they contacted me that they would love for us to participate. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, I didn't know logistically how our creative team would possibly be able to put mm-hmm. that up. So I had to get in touch with them and say, thank you so much. Unfortunately, I don't know how we can make this happen. And I was very flattered. She said, we really would love your show in this festival. Aww. So how do you feel about, we do the whole thing, we cast it, we get you a director, a little choreography. If you're willing to give us poetic license, you know, we'd love to put it up here. And it was kind of a fun experience because I said, sure. And we all went out to Chicago the night of the festival and had no idea what to expect.
Yeah, it was terrifying.
Because you've given your baby over exactly. to, like, other people to be like, have fun, but, like, be good to it.
Right. And I did, you know, throughout their rehearsal process, I kept getting in touch with the director. Do you have any questions? Would mm-hmm. you like to speak to Jody? And they're, nope, we're good. Yeah. So that was even scarier. Like...
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes you think no news is good news, but mm-hmm. then you really want something.
Yes.
Like, you're like, oh, you don't need anything? You don't have any questions? It is all clear to you? Because it's sometimes not even all clear to us. And like, we read it every day. Like, so that was definitely a learning experience in many ways, because you realize if you do let, especially so early in the process,
right.
like that was the first time that we'd ever seen the show from beginning to end on its feet with actors, not behind music stands. Mm. And so it made me realize that when you give that up, and it's not necessarily the level of expertise that you're looking for, that you have no control over any mm-hmm. of that, you know. But I think that the exciting thing is that the audience reactions mm. were all very genuine, and they have been throughout the process of this show, which has been amazing. Mm. And people laughed where they were supposed to laugh, you know. there were missed moments, but that'll happen when somebody doesn't understand a moment or whatever. But I really think we came back from that and thought, you know, we have a good product here. Yeah. There are definitely some things that we need to work on, but it gave us a path forward.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Okay, so then after you have the Chicago run, okay, again, how did it change from admissions to Dear Prospective Student? Because I was like, I just knew it was admissions, and then all of a sudden it was DPS, and I was like, what happened?
I love the name admissions at first because it has a double meaning. You know, it's about college admissions, but it's also about each student sort of, by the end, admitting something, whether it be their failure or their hopes or dreams. So I love that about it. Mm-hmm. One of the problems was every time I told people that that's the name of the show, they were like, oh, is that the Tina Fey movie? I don't know if you remember. That was called Admission.
She was a college counselor.
Yes. Okay. It was a pretty crappy movie.
Yes.
and people just thought, you know, we got the rights to it and turned it into a musical. So was problem one.
Yeah. Okay.
Problem two, someone pointed out, is that about hospital admissions? Which never crossed my mind.
Me neither.
Yeah.
But us either.
Okay.
I shouldn't probably say this too loudly and maybe not record it, but I'm like, who would write a musical about hospital admissions?
Right.
I probably shouldn't say that because now somebody's going to write it.
Don't. If you're listening to this, just don't. Don't do it.
I mean, maybe there's a nurse out there that really has a story to tell.
Like some really funny,
unique
story.
Don't limit people's stories, but come on.
Right.
Like, what are the chances?
I know.
I mean, it was not about a hospital.
No. No.
And it had the graphic always had the graduation cap. It always had the graduation cap. So it was so clear to us,
and then I guess when, you know, that got me thinking about maybe I should start thinking of another name for it. Mm-hmm. This was right before Dear Evan Hansen exploded. Yeah. So, you know, I hope people don't think we're copying from them. But I love the idea of Dear Prospective Student. First of all, it's the very first three words spoken of the show. And I wanted it to sort of be almost like a letter. Yeah. A love letter or an advice letter to all of these kids out there who are going through this process that, you know, it's all going to be okay no matter what happens. So I wanted to address it to them, and I thought the title was a good way to do that.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's just beautiful.
Aww, it is. Thank you.
She's good.
She's real good.
That's why I like her.
You want to produce the show?
You know, I would do it if I could find the money. I guess that's the whole thing.
That's
but if
the
there's
whole
somebody
thing.
Out there right now who would like to produce this show, please email me at jodybeck@gmail.com. Thank you very much.
We really will be putting information in the show notes. If you guys are interested to learn more about the show, but I do still have a few more questions. I want to talk about a few more things.
Sure.
Okay, so we've changed the name, and then was there another reading in between there before the industry concert? Was there anything else in between there?
We did a full staged, or not staged reading, but we did a full table read with invited guests I don't know when I would say that.
September last 2017.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or maybe it was even later because I remember we got Damon later to come and record some other
things. Oh, yes, you're right. Mm-hmm. Yes.
But and that, just so you know, Damon Gillespie, who was on NBC's TV show Rise, was our original Marcus for the staged reading, and then he was amazing and always was. He was at the original cast recording. But he came back and recorded some things for us even when he was filming Rise. It was pretty it was pretty awesome.
What a sweet kid.
Yeah. We knew we you know, had roped somebody in who was going someplace, you know, which was kind of great.
And then you also had, let's talk about the cast. So you had him, and then you had Ali Trim. Mm-hmm. And then who else was in the cast?
Jennifer Haley was also in that cast. Ms. Evans was played by my dear friend Justin Barnett, who I had worked with years ago in Galveston, Texas, at Galveston Island Outdoor Musicals, through Tropical Storm Allison.
Holy jeez!
Yeah, that's kind of crazy.
We had Patrick,
and we had Patrick John Moran, who I'd also worked with. Also at Galveston, and didn't even realize it in the audition. He had to remind me that I knew him. And I was like, I think I know that guy. But we just completely lost contact with each other completely. But he played Harold. And Matthew Schatz was Buck. Shoshana Richman is Kendall. And Chris Brick is Freddie.
Oh, yep. Chris.
So
love
adorable.
Chris.
Yeah. He's so great.
So that was our first Equity cast.
That's fun. It's a fun cast.
And we did all the casting ourselves, which really, honestly, when we think about like where we started out there, we did that ourselves, and we ended up picking some real rising stars.
Yeah.
You know, and everybody that we have included, we would want again.
Yeah.
Like it's just been it's become a family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so then in October was the industry concert at Green Room 42.
Correct.
And like that cast too, like at the end, they were like, we loved this so much. We had so much fun. And like they just loved everybody. It's just, it really is just like you say, it's just like a family.
Yeah. Yeah. Show we had, Allie and Damon couldn't participate, so we had Keaton Whitaker,
yes,
and we had
awesome.
Rashad Burrows,
yes, Nick Rashad Burrows, and then we also we had all the adult characters played by one man, which I actually really loved. We should talk about that.
He's so great,
but it was Paul Whitty. So we had just a phenomenal Broadway cast.
From Broadway's Once. Mm-hmm. Yes, I was always a fan of his, so that was very exciting to have him in the show.
And the kids loved him. Like he would like teach them like on breaks. He would teach them licks from Once and stuff for their auditions. Yeah. I mean, just like everybody, just like the sweetest, nicest people, and they absolutely. Everybody loved being with everyone else. It was really, it was so much fun. Mm-hmm. Okay, so now here we are. It's October. You had the industry concert. That went really well. The audience loved it.
Sold out.
Yeah, sold out.
First sold out show at Green Room 42.
Really?
Yeah, it was their first sold out, I think. At least that's what Ben and Joe said when they told us.
I did know that.
Yeah.
That's like, very exciting.
I think it was to the point where they were bringing in chairs. Like, they didn't, they it was like, people are here.
So good.
Yeah.
So good. Yeah. Yeah, that was fun. So Jody let me assistant direct her on that. That Woo-hoo! Was super fun.
Awesome, yes.
It was my honor to have you along, honestly.
So much fun. Okay, so now here we are, and now we're wondering what is next for the show. And that's why we do this series, is because we want people to know about these shows that are up and coming, these shows that are being worked. If there are producers listening, if there are people who are more interested and like want to listen to songs, you can go to the Dear Perspective student website. And so can you give me that website correctly so I don't mess it up, Karen?
I believe it's dearperspectivestudent.com.
Isn't it? I thought it was Dear Perspective. Isn't the musical in there somewhere?
No.
It's not?
No.
Okay.
No.
It's just dearperspectivestudent.com.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
We also have a YouTube channel with all the videos from the Green Room concert event.
Yeah.
And then also there's an Instagram that's just at dearstudent. And the Twitter is at dearstudent as well.
Right.
Correct?
And the Facebook is Dear Perspective Student.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you guys can go on all of the socials and check them out there. We'll have information in the show notes as well if you're interested to learn more about the show. And if there are any producers listening, this show is so much fun. It's so good. It's so positive. I really think that it speaks to, like we said at the beginning of this episode, like this generation that's just like bogged down with like what is like so much pressure about trying to be the greatest at everything. And especially in New York City, where like you have to fight to get into like kindergarten.
Right.
Yeah. Like, yes. And that's not even
that's
a joke.
When it starts.
It's crazy.
And earlier.
It is
yes.
crazy.
Yeah.
It is crazy. And I like I was saying to Karen, we had a talk this week, and there isn't a day that goes by that there isn't some report about some aspect of what we cover in the show, whether it be concussions on for NFL players or, you know, the rising cost of education, the fact that, you know, the Asian population of Harvard decided to sue Harvard because of affirmative action. Mm-hmm. Like, these are real questions that that we actually do address in the show. And while it is a musical and it's a lot of fun, there are a lot of moments where, you know, you have to think about what does it mean to say you're Native American when you're not?
Right.
Like, what does that actually mean? And, you know, we can't cover it like the New York Times can cover it, but it's actually in there.
Yeah.
And, you know, when somebody stands up on a national stage and claims to be Native American, and now we all understand that you can't just do that. You know?
Or claim to be black.
Or claim
because
to be black.
Because you just went tanning and curled your hair.
Right. Right. And you get to, you know, be the head of the NAACP chapter. Mm-hmm. I mean, these things are real things that are happening in our country and in our culture.
Yep.
And this show addresses that.
It does. Yeah.
And just to, sorry, just put it into context about the Native American, one of our characters is so desperate by the time she gets to the admissions office that day and feels so inferior to what she views as her competition that she decides on the spot that she's going to tell the admissions officer that she is part Native American and actually goes to Wikipedia to do the research so that she can talk about her experience.
Yeah. I mean, and it's so real.
It really is.
It is just a real thing that happens in the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know.
That's the other thing that's so awesome about this show is how well it deals with things that everyone has either seen in the news or unfortunately might know somebody who's done because they're just so stressed out about trying to be the greatest and the best.
Right.
Sorry. I just wanted to say, as much as I want it to be a message to those kids, I also want it to be a message to the parents.
Yeah.
Like, chill the F out.
Yeah.
And stop trying to live vicariously through your children. Like, it's okay. It's all going to be okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And there's another, I mean, and it's actually kind of a big piece, I think. But our main character is a young black man from Chicago. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think especially at this time where people are starting to question what affirmative action means, like there is a moment in the show where someone literally looks him right in the eye and was like, well, we know where you're going to school. And that statement is actually said on a daily basis to black and brown people in this country. And it is a legitimate thing that people say.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it's illegitimate, but it is
something that is actually said. Right, it's a misnomer. Yeah, because people actually think that, like, we just can get a full ride because we're black. This is stupid. I was listening to a podcast, it was about a year ago, and this woman, she was black, and she said, it was, like, right around the time she was about to go to college, and she was working at a camp over the summer, and she was like the token black kid, which, like, that's my life, and so she it's been my life, and so she said she sat there and like this young white man sitting next to her basically said, like, he didn't basically said, he outright said that he believed that, like, she just would get she got a full ride, and she was like, I'm working full time and also trying to go to school. Like, no, that's not how this works.
Right.
That's not how affirmative action actually. Y'all, it's Google. You could just Google what affirmative action actually is and get a correct answer. Mm-hmm. I don't understand this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah.
Ignorance, man.
Yeah. It just pervades. And now that we live in a world of social media, it's like if you want to believe anything, you can, because somebody is out there promoting it as fact.
It's true.
So it's, you know, and I think as the generations go on and we observe what social media does to this process too, yeah, of admissions. It's like, what has it done to engagements and inviting people to the prom? And it is always about who has the most stuff, who has the best stuff, and who's, yeah, going to the best school. And, you know, can you announce it on your Instagram before, mm-hmm, your friend can? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's really, it is like this hyper competitive world that's infiltrated every level of our lives.
It's true. Super true. Yeah, well, wondering.
But it's a Broadway musical, and it's a lot of fun, and hilariously funny. Come see it.
It is. It is. Things can be super fun and super deep at the same time.
Absolutely.
Really, right, can.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. Yep. All right. Well, it was awesome having you guys. Thank you so much for coming on our podcast. I'm really happy this is going to be the first of the new work series. And again, guys, just like all the socials, Dear Student, DearProspectiveStudent.com. And seriously, if there are any producers listening, there's a show here that's awesome that you guys can, you know, get up on its feet. All right. We'll talk to you guys later. Thank you so much for listening. We love you guys. We appreciate you listening. Don't forget to share, like, and follow. And we'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at SuppsMusical.com.